Welcome to International Dispute Negotiation, your guide to resolving disputes everywhere.
This is Mike McElrath, and this podcast is about different ways of accepting and managing the risks of dispute resolution, presenting them through the eyes of experts from different countries and backgrounds.
Days start to finish.
From issue of the notice of adjudication, you then have, the parties have 7 days to appoint the adjudicator. The dispute is then referred to that adjudicator on day 7, and that adjudicator has 28 days from the day of referral to make a decision.
In the fall of 2009, CPR introduced rules for expedited arbitration. These rules provide for disputes of all sizes and complexity to be decided within 6 months. And make almost no exception to go longer. They've been welcomed as innovative and party-oriented in some quarters, while defenders of more traditional arbitration have voiced some concern about whether 6 months is really suitable for large, complex disputes. Rather than directly defend the new CPR rules, this week's podcast looks at an even faster form of dispute resolution, adjudication of construction disputes in the UK. By statute, construction contracts in the United Kingdom are subject to adjudication, a means of provisionally resolving disputes within a 28-day period. While a losing party can later challenge an adjudicator's decision in court or in arbitration, Nick Henshey, a partner at the London offices of the law firm Mayer Brown Rowan Ma, says that most parties don't. In this episode, Nick explains how parties have become used to the speed of the process and the speed of the result.
Limitations on size?
There's no limitations on the size of the dispute.
Or the complexity.
Or the complexity of the dispute. There are very, very minor caveats for particular types of construction operation that are outside of the Act, but by and large, one should work on the basis that if it's a construction project and it's a dispute that arises under a construction contract and the project is in the United Kingdom, then it's subject to adjudication proceedings.
So where adjudication is today is UK construction. Where else do you see it?
So it's mandatory in all United Kingdom construction contracts. It is also occasionally written in at the option of parties that are contracting on construction projects outside of the United Kingdom but subject to English law. So if it was a project in France, say, subject to English law, the adjudication process would not apply by statute, but the parties could agree that it could apply. Outside of where they voluntarily agreed it, the two other areas where adjudication is mandatory in New Zealand and Australia, where they have very, very similar process.
You are seeing, however, party agreements to agree to a process of adjudication outside of the United Kingdom, where probably the influence of UK law firms.
Absolutely. We have seen that on some rare instances, and where we have seen it, we have to say that the employer has been, or the client whose project it is, has been very badly advised to include adjudication provisions in their contracts, because obviously the process, which is a very quick and rough and ready process, is one which favours contractors and subcontractors and generally claiming parties that are likely to have claims for money. So as an employer, if I were advising an employer who was procuring a big project abroad that wouldn't ordinarily be subject to adjudication proceedings, and I certainly would not be advising him to include adjudication provisions, because it gives the contractor a very easy and quick and cheap remedy to claim money.
Well, and why is that? I mean, why is it a quick and cheap remedy of claiming money? I mean, 28 days, you have a burden of proof, right?
Yeah, but it's important to understand the philosophy of adjudication and why it was introduced in the United Kingdom. You have to go back to the late 80s, early 90s, and a chap called Michael Latham produced the Latham Report, which was an inquiry into the construction industry. And he concluded that the major problems on construction projects in the United Kingdom was the lack of payment flowing down the supply chain. So the monies were typically held by the banks at the top, through the client, through the main contractor, subcontractor, sub-subcontractor and supplier. And it was these guys at the bottom of the food chain, if you like, that were finding great difficulty in getting paid, and many of them going to the wall, becoming insolvent, because they had no easy remedy where they hadn't been paid sums that were legitimately due under the contract. They had to be contemplating in the late 80s, early 90s, the prospects of going to court and perhaps funding a litigation for a year or 2 years before they could have a reasonable prospect of recovering their money. So he really recommended that there needed to be a process introduced into the construction industry which enabled contractors and people in the supply chain to be able to go off to get a remedy that was quick, cheap, quick and dirty, if you like, but they could get paid their money, they could survive, and if the other party felt so aggrieved about it, they would always have the option of going off to court and having a full hearing of the dispute. But in the meantime, they would have to pay.
And who are these men and women who are the adjudicators, the people who get appointed in 7 days?
So the likes of any of the nominating bodies that nominate arbitrators, for example. So the Chartered Institute of Arbitrators is a recognised nominating body. It has a panel of adjudicators, most of whom are also the arbitrators.
Lawyers, professors, engineers? The
majority of adjudicators in the United Kingdom are, in fact, from industry. So they're engineers, architects, surveyors, although there's a fair degree of lawyers on the panel as well. So very, very much like the Chartered Institute of Arbitrators' list of arbitrators would double up almost as a list of adjudicators as well.
What's the general quality of the adjudicators that you see?
Well, initially, when it came in 1998,
is there formal training of adjudicators?
Or can
anybody just sign up and say, I'm an adjudicator?
It depends. What happens is that you can name in the contract, the parties can name in a contract their adjudicator or a list of adjudicators, the same way you could do it with your arbitrators. It's not uncommon in construction contracts to name the adjudicator. And or you may name the discipline of the adjudicator. So you say the adjudicator shall be a lawyer or it shall be an architect, right, to be agreed by the parties or otherwise selected by a third party. So, for example, the president of the Chartered Institute of Arbitrators. Each of the institutions, such as the Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors, the Royal Institute of British Architects, the Chartered Institute of Arbitrators, will have panels of adjudicators that have to pass some nominal one-day, two-day training course in order to qualify and go on to the panel. And in recent years...
But there's no requirement of this certification to be considered a adjudicator.
By statute, there's no requirement that an adjudicator passes any formal qualification.
So anybody can hold themselves out as saying, tomorrow I've decided I'm going to be an adjudicator.
Absolutely. And by the same token, the system is greatly abused at the time of negotiation of the contract, because obviously those who hold the bargaining power in the negotiation will try and name an adjudicator in the contract that they might believe would be sympathetic to their point of view. So typically that will mean trying, as an employer, likely to face claims from contractors, you will try and name perhaps a lawyer adjudicator in the contract who might very vigorously uphold and apply the contractual terms, whereas a contractor or a subcontractor would be looking for a surveyor or an engineer perhaps to look at that dispute to be named in the contract because they might think they'd be more sympathetic to an industry-type claim, if you like.
Well, let's assume that we've got an adjudication requirement, whether by contract or by statute in the UK. We've got a dispute. Let's say it's for £2 million, a big dispute. Supplier notifies the claim, and the appointing body may be the Chartered Institute of Arbitrators. 7 days, you get an adjudicator appointed, whoever, an engineer or a lawyer. Mm-hmm. What happens in the next 28 days? How does that unfold?
So typically, on the day of the appointment of the adjudicator, he knows that he then has, by statute, 28 days to reach a decision. So the first thing he will do is call for the referral of the dispute. So the claiming party will then, within a day or two of his appointment, or perhaps on his day of his appointment, serve their full claim, and there is no limit to what that claim.
The claimant starts the process, has to already have everything laid out and ready to go.
Yes. So effectively, the
which is interesting. It's a different difference from arbitration. Arbitration generally, claimant starts a claim, and then it's always kind of strange that the claimant then is given a term to actually submit the statement of claim with many rules.
Yeah. This is a very what had to happen in this process was the courts had to recognize, and there's a lot of case law, as you can imagine, that's built up around adjudication. The courts had to recognise that the process has got to be fair, it's got to comply with the rules of natural justice. Parties have to have a fair opportunity to present their case. And therefore, what happened in the early days of adjudication is that you would have what we'll call ambushes, where parties would prepare their case, prepare...
Right, 28 days, have a full claim.
Prepare expert reports, prepare witness statements, and then ambush the opponent with the claim. And they would say, this is the first I knew about it. I can't possibly, it's not fair to make me respond within 7 days. So the law has developed, and what's developed is the meaning and the definition of crystallisation of a dispute. So you can only commence adjudication if there is a dispute. And for the dispute to crystallise, there has to obviously be a claim by a party and a rejection of that claim. So party A cannot claim £1 million. When he hasn't been paid within 2 days, he goes off to adjudication. There has to be a process of evolution of negotiation to the point where a court would recognise the parties are in dispute. And once you're at that point, then you can commence the adjudication.
At that point, the responding party isn't being ambushed. They actually know something about what
Absolutely.
It is.
Absolutely. And okay. if, for the first time in the adjudication, the responding party is presented with a case which he's never seen before, which comes out of the blue, which he says, well, if you had presented this to me as your claim before the adjudication, I might well have looked differently on it. I may well have paid you some more money. If he's in a position where he can argue that, then there's a very fair chance that that dispute has not crystallised and therefore the adjudication was commenced prematurely.
And then, and this is through the evolution of case law yes. subsequent to the passage yeah. of the statute.
Yeah. So there's a lot of detailed case law on when a dispute is deemed to be arisen.
Forcing the negotiations to take place prior. Yeah,
absolutely. So that the idea the responding party doesn't rock up in the adjudication faced with claims he'd never met before. The idea is he will have seen all these claims, he will have reviewed them, he will have analysed them, and he will have chosen to reject them. And then he will have to answer them again in the
Now we're going to get down to brass knuckles and actually try to resolve this since we disagree.
Yeah.
So day one, you start the process, you have 7 days, you get an adjudicator. Seventh day, the claimant serves the claim.
Yeah.
And then where do we go from there?
Then the adjudicator will issue his timetable. He knows he's got 28 days. Typically, because he's concerned to make sure that he can reach a decision within 28 days, he will order the responding party to respond to the claim in any way they choose within 7 days. Sometimes 10 days. Very occasionally 14, because parties that expect to be on the end of adjudications, like employers, will very often write into the contract some part of the procedure for the adjudication. So a typical amendment to a contract for an employer is to say, in the event of an adjudication and in the event that the employer is the defending party, he shall have 14 days to respond to a claim. So you
can, doesn't leave a lot more time.
It doesn't leave a lot of time for the adjudicator. So, but if we work on the typical timetable, it would usually be 7 days to respond, so you're in day seven. The adjudicator will then give the claiming party perhaps another 7 days to produce a reply to the response. And then in the third week of the adjudication, between day 14 and day 21, there would be a one-day hearing, unless the adjudicator thinks he can decide it on paper, which many times they can. But you will usually then be in any sort of, if we're talking about your £2 million dispute, you would anticipate...
And there may be a fair amount of documentation on a £2 million dispute.
Yeah, a lot. You could anticipate then a one-day hearing, and then that leaves 7 days for the adjudicator to write up his decision. Albeit there is provision in the Act that with the agreement of the referring party, i.e. the claiming party, the process can be extended from 28 to 42 days. And what often happens, if the adjudicator thinks that the dispute is really quite complex and that he cannot reach a reasoned and fair decision within the 28-day period, he will invite the referring party, claiming party, to extend the process by 14 days. If the referring party doesn't agree, then there is the ability for the adjudicator to say, I cannot comply with my obligations to reach a decision, proper decision, within 28 days, and therefore I resign. So the pressure
is... Does that actually happen in practice?
That does happen in practice. Very rarely, because adjudicators will understand that they're really, their role is not to act like a judge or an arbitrator and to do a forensic investigation into the case with the view that they should reach a fully properly particularised, reasoned decision that's absolutely right on any view. A lot of adjudicators will take a sort of a rough justice attitude towards it, to have a look, to read the reports, to speak to the witness, get a feeling for what happened, and then to sort of make a sensible, what they would say, probably a sensible decision, as opposed to a decision that a judge or an arbitrator might make after a full investigation.
So let's say we've got our £2 million dispute. Things have gone very quick. A lot of documents have been submitted. A claim with maybe 100 attachments, photographs, lots of evidence. The response comes in, similar document. The adjudicator takes the time that's necessary, but comes up with a wrong decision, in our view. I would say we're the losing party. We got to pay £2 million, and we think it's completely wrong. What do? We appeal?
Well, the first thing you have to do is you have to pay.
I can't suspend payment. There's nothing. I got to.
There
pay.
Is the circumstances in which you can do that are
that's
so remote.
That's £2 million, yeah. and he got it completely wrong. I got to pay that.
And in one of the very early case laws, this was established very early on in when the new process came in. There was a very well known case called Bouygues versus Dahl Jensen, where in that case the adjudicator reached his decision, and he found for. Dahl Jensen, I believe, I don't remember which one it was, but he found for one of the parties. But when he added up the sums, there were claims and counterclaims, when he added up and to total who should pay who in this adjudication. He made an arithmetical error in his calculation, which meant rather than Party X paying Party Y £1 million, for sake of example, Party Y had to pay Party X £1 million. And it was obvious on the face of his decision that this was just a wrong decision.
He'd made a mistake.
So how does the wrong party fix that?
But
Bouygues were ordered, the decision required Bouygues to pay the money. They refused to pay the money, so there's a manifest error on the face of the decision. Yeah. Dahl Jensen went off to enforce the decision in court, and the judge said, I'm sorry, I cannot look into the quality of this decision. The decision is the decision, and you must pay.
Even though there was manifest error. So what's the remedy for the wrong party in that case?
So in that case, what you have to do is you go off and you would commence, you would follow the dispute resolution provisions in the contract, so be it arbitration or litigation. You have to pay up under the decision, but then you can go on, and it's not a challenge to the decision, it's not a rehearing of the decision, but you go off and you have the dispute again as if the adjudication had never taken place.
In the meantime, you pay. As you said earlier, in the adjudication, an adjudication is binding as to the payment, but it's not binding as to a final resolution.
No, it's not a final resolution. It's binding until either the parties settle it amicably or it's resolved by either court or by litigation if the parties choose to proceed in that way.
How often do parties feel that they're really wronged in adjudication? You do this day in day. This is your bread and butter.
Typically, the quality of the decisions is not great, but you find that when you lose an adjudication, it's almost inevitable that you will say to yourself or to within your team, this is a shocking decision, that's adjudication. But the reality, the sort of proof...
You would never say that to me.
But the proof of the pudding is that very few people go on and actually go and challenge the decision.
Even though they feel that they were completely robbed, they don't challenge it. Why is that?
And people tend to learn to live with the decision.
It's imperfect.
It's imperfect, but
they live with it.
They live with it because, and it may be that they will manage to get a settlement or an amicable resolution. It may be that typically adjudications are not an adjudication, a hearing of the entire dispute under the contract. Quite often, it's a tactical advice for a claiming party that if they're not being paid sums they believe they're entitled to, let's not go and adjudicate for all of the sums we're due because that's going to take a long time to prepare. But let's say if it's a dispute of variation account on a construction contract, you might take one variation. You might take it to adjudication. It might be for £30,000. You may think that establishes a principle under this contract. We'll go and win that, and then we get paid. And if the other party doesn't like it and doesn't start to administer this contract properly, then we'll go and do another one and another one and another one until eventually the parties see sense and they come together and they try and resolve their dispute because the adjudication process is itself a threat and a bargaining tool in the hands of
some. It forces the parties to work together better.
Yeah, because otherwise they know that within 28 days this dispute can be resolved.
Somebody's going to have to pay some money.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But it's interesting that you've got this rough justice, 28 days. It can be very complex, from small disputes to big disputes. So high probability that somebody's going to feel that they were wronged. And yet you don't see these being challenged, at least on the merits.
Right. Very, as I say, maybe it's because quite often the adjudications are just part of a larger dispute.
Or maybe it's just that parties want to get on with things afterwards. They feel that imperfect isn't great, but...
I think that's right. And also, a lot of the adjudications are of a size of dispute where it's really probably not in the party's interest to go and spend more money on lawyers money on legal fees.
But you wonder about, for example, comparing this with arbitration as it sometimes play out, where adjudication could be like the proverbial ripping a bandage off your arm, but very quickly. Whereas arbitration is sort of like doing it very slowly with excruciating pain over many months and years. And maybe parties at the end of the day say, well, I've ripped off the bandage and it hurt, but I don't want to go back and rip anymore.
Yeah. And I think also the other thing is people have become so used to adjudication and to the speed of the process and to the speed of the result and the decision that when they go along to their lawyers and say, I really don't like this and, I want to think about court or arbitration, and the lawyer says, well, you're looking at 18 months, 2 years, and this amount of legal fees, it's really not an appealing prospect to them.
Well, yeah, so what does this mean for the future, given you've got this rough justice, it's approximate, a lot of parties feel aggrieved, but they're living with it. Do you think there's going to be reform or change of the...
Well,
the adjudication's been here how many years, about 10 years?
It started in 98, so we're in sort of 11th year.
Yeah.
So There's a bill going through Parliament at the moment that will introduce some minor changes, but really not to the process. One of the major changes is that parties obviously tried to start getting clever in their contracts about how they could effectively deter parties from commencing adjudication proceedings. One of the ways that's been traditionally used is to say that to provide in the contract that the party that commences the adjudication shall be responsible for the whole cost of the process, both the defendant's costs and the claimant's costs, no matter what the result. And the idea was that everyone knows that most adjudications are commenced by the contractors against their counterparty up the line, so to speak, for payment or non-payment.
Against their customers.
Yeah, against their customers. And so customers started putting clauses saying, well, that's fine, we can't contract out of your right to adjudicate, but we can put things in there that will deter you. One of the things they put in typically was that the whole cost of the process, including the adjudicator's costs, the party costs, the lawyer's fees, the expert fees, must all be paid by the party that commenced the adjudication. So one of the provisions...
And is that enforceable?
The courts have found that to be enforceable. It's a contractual agreement, and they will, under English law, certainly they will respect the rights of the parties to agree that. But in the new bill that's going through Parliament, that clause will be held to be an invalid clause.
Slightly changing topics or gears, the CPR Institute this past year introduced rules for expedited arbitration for commercial disputes of any size and complexity, which provide a default of one arbitrator and from start to finish are to be completed within 6 months. And they don't give tribunals authority or arbitrators authority to vary the 6 month or extend the 6 months, except for quasi force majeure circumstances. But there have been some voices of skepticism circulating that 6 months may not be realistic for large complex disputes. View from a construction adjudication expert, 6 months possible?
I think absolutely. The one thing to say that the slight difference in the process would be that if a 6 month arbitration is to effectively be a final and binding decision from which you can't go and seek recourse over a longer process, then that may be the concern in that instance. The beauty about adjudication is that, and I have been involved in the last 10 years in disputes ranging up to as much as over 100 million in a single adjudication, it's amazing what can be achieved. Even in the 7 day period that a respondent gets to respond to a case, that he can go away, you work round the clock for 7 days, you can do witness statements, you can even instruct expert for the first time, get him to review, admittedly a limited amount of documentation, but get him up to speed, get prepared for a hearing, present your case coherently and properly to an adjudicator at the hearing. And really, it is amazing how much you can convey, if you properly marshal your troops, how much you can present of a case within a 28-day process. So I would say, without doubt, 6 months is an awful long time, and as long as a sensible timetable is set within that period, I wouldn't have any doubt that justice can be done to most cases within that period.
Nick, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to International Dispute Negotiation. This podcast is presented by the International Institute for Conflict Prevention and Resolution, CPR. CPR is a membership-based nonprofit organization that promotes excellence and innovation in public and private dispute resolution, providing an international resource for the avoidance, management, and resolution of business disputes. For further information about CPR, or to download archived versions of this podcast, go to www.cpradr.org. Questions about this podcast or the issues discussed can be addressed to idn@cpradr.org. The music of Note Noir is used with permission.